we continue Candidate Week with the race for state's attorney. Also, Veep star and Chicago improviser Dan Bacadal. And another installment of Write Club Radio. Now here's your host, a man who is running negative ads against negative ads, Justin Kaufman.
In a world where there's negative ads, too negative. I'm upset with the negative ads so far because there's not been enough infrared, you know, black and white kind of infrared making candidates look like the devil. That's my favorite negative ad. But this candidate, when their eyes go black and their face goes stark white, that's my favorite, right? That's when we appreciate the negative ad. The stuff where you're just throwing facts and figures at us, don't care. You really got to infrair. Welcome to The Download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman. Honored to be with you tonight on this beautiful evening in early March. Wow. Michigan Avenue is abuzz. We got a great show for you tonight. Great Chicago conversation. We continue Candidate Week here on The Download tonight. The candidates for Cook County State's Attorney, the Democratic primary. The latest polls have challenger Kim Fox edging just ahead, but it's too close to call with incumbent Anita Alvarez. We'll talk with both of them tonight and the other Democrat in the race, Donna Moore. Also, Mike Fouché will be back to co-pilot. Talk about the big day in Illinois politics, from bad tweets to former presidents to more and more negative ads. Wow. Do you like meat? Do you like vegetables? Don't vote for this candidate. Wow. We got a couple of those on this radio station. A lot of that. Just assume that Donald Trump's face is turning different colors when you listen on the radio here. Also tonight, Chicago improvisers Dan Bacadal and Eddie Furman make up the duo Trainwreck. It's a fully improvised play. It's a great show where they take a suggestion, create a one act on the spot. They only get back to Chicago once in a blue moon to do it, and that's happening tomorrow at the Second City. Bacadal is currently in Los Angeles. You may know him from his work as the dirtbag congressman from Ohio on the hit HBO show Veep, which is coming back soon. And tonight we bring back Write Club Radio. Lindsay Moscato and Ian Belknap take their great live lit show and bring it to us here on the radio. This week, two writers will take on the topic good versus evil, and we'll decide which writer encapsulates their category best. Two writers enter, one writer leaves. It's Write Club Radio. That's coming up tonight at 10 o'clock. You're going to be the judge of that, 312-981-7200. All that plus news, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon, and production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this here is The Download. All right, let's get to it. Start with the carryout. Of course, this is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper, so you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. The alleged killer of 9-year-old Tyshawn Lee was charged today. Prosecutors said this guy's been in jail since November on a different gun charge. And they say he laughed when describing luring Tyshawn Lee from the playground to the alley where he allegedly shot the boy execution style. Prosecutors also say this was a gang retaliation, killing Tyshawn to send a message to the boy's father, and that the killer planned to torture the boy. Are you kidding me? I'm stunned. This is, man, it's so, I mean, the only thing you can take away is that it's so brutal and so inhumane that it's more serial killer than everyday life, but I don't know. Stunned. God. Bill Clinton's the first of the spouses to make the rounds this week in Illinois. Bill Clinton, who I like to call OG Melania, hit up the West Side for some breakfast and handshakes, and then hit up an Evanston synagogue for some prayer and handshakes. Then he hit up the handshake convention for some handshakes and handshakes. The latest poll has Hillary up 40 points, so I'm not sure why Bill is stumping at all in the Chicago area. But hey, he loves food and he loves touching people, so there you go. The National Republican Senatorial Committee deleted a tweet today that said, Tammy Duckworth doesn't stand up for veterans. Poor choice of words. She's a double amputee. Yeah. Governor Rauner came out today and said Speaker Mike Madigan was, quote, not doing his job. This, of course, is true, since the House is out of session for a month. Returning on April 4th. The Senate was in session, but the House? Nah, they be chilling. We be chilling. Rauner must have heard me complaining about this. I hate to say it, but I'm with you, Governor. Rain hellfire on this month-long vacation stuff. And let's get rid of collective bargaining rights for all... Ugh. What happened? I blacked out. What did I say? Today is International Women's Day, and now it's time for the Downloads Mansplaining Moment. So, ladies, it's Women's International History Month. See, it's a holiday to recognize all of the achievement that women have made in society. It's every March. It's important, okay? And you should know about it. And that has been the Download Mansplains International Women's Day. A new app called People is about to hit the market. It gives people the ability to rate you as a person. And there's nothing you can do about it. Critics are worried about weak anti-bullying measures, which makes me laugh because the anti-bullying measures would be not having an app like this that rates people, right? Wow, are we going backwards, society? I feel like we're in reverse. In weather, another great day, huh? What's happening? Will this go down in history as the mildest winter ever to have happened in Chicago? Oh, wait, did I just jinx it? Oh, man, I just jinxed it. In sports, why don't we start with the Bulls swelling in Jimmy Butler's knee? I guess it's getting better, and he's still up in the air. And when it comes to Thursday's game against the Spurs, that's a big game. The Bulls have won two in a row, but currently hover around the last spot in the East, which means they're also hover towards the top spot in the East because, well, it's the NBA East. The Blackhawks get back at it tomorrow night against the Blues and then the Stars on Friday. That's how we like it. Also, Marcus Kruger, boom, extended. Free agency is beginning to take shape, and the Bears do have interest in former Denver Bronco linebacker Danny Trevathan. Although GM Ryan Pace is singing that time-tested old standard, we're gonna be cautious, cautious, not gonna spend a lot of money, cautious. For one time, I'd like to hear a GM say, oh man, so much talent's out there, I'm buying it all. And then, like, the theme song from Ballers hits. Remember, the Bears were 6-10, so come on, more Ballers. Cubs are in talks with Jake Arrieta for a long-term deal, but it's just talks, nothing concrete. The Cubs are smart. If Arrieta does what he did last year, especially down the stretch, you're going to have to pay him super money anyway. But if he slows down, maybe gives up 3, 4, 5 runs a game, boom, you give him Steve Traxel money, right? I mean, I should negotiate more baseball contracts. I don't want to make a big deal about it, but I've won a couple times in fantasy baseball. And finally tonight, Dr. Quentin Young died today at the age of 92. Quentin was a longtime advocate for healthcare and a former chairman at Cook County Hospital. He was the doctor called upon to treat Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. after rocks were thrown at him in Marquette Park. I had the honor to produce Dr. Young when he was a contributor at Public Radio. You know, he schooled me in single-payer healthcare, and he taught me about the importance of colonoscopies at an early age. He could dive deep on policies and politics and still find a way to give real talk on diabetes. He was a great man in Chicago history, and I, for one, am sorry to see him go. Thanks for being Chicago's doctor, Dr. Quentin Young. Well, that's the carryout for March 8th, 2016. Hey, eat outside. Much more to come tonight on The Download. Dan Bacadal and Eddie Furman coming up after the news. Also, it's candidate week tonight. The candidates for state's attorney in the Democratic primary. It's Anita Alvarez, Kim Fox, and Donna Moore. It's The Download tonight. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my man?
I'm doing well. How are you? Another primary night.
I know, right?
Let's dive in.
We got a lot to talk about. It looks good so far.
Hey, look, you've got delegate-rich Mississippi and Hawaii coming down the pike tonight, so I'm going to be keeping an eye on those two races right there.
There you go. Those two states. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. If you're fans of Chicago Improv, then you are aware of my next guest and their show, Trainwreck. Trainwreck is a completely improvised two-man play featuring Eddie Furman and Dan Bacadal. Both of these gentlemen have great resumes here in town. Furman has written and performed for Second City and is a big part of the Annoyance Theater, co-writing the hit show Co-Ed Prison Sluts. And Bacadal was on stage at Second City, and he now lives in L.A. where he can be seen in movies and television, including FXX's hit Legit, Life in Pieces on CBS, and Veep on HBO, where he plays the dirtball Congressman Roger Furlong. These two are reuniting in Chicago at Second City ETC on Wednesday night for Trainwreck. Ed is here with me in studio. Dan is on the phone from L.A. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, man. Thanks for having us, yeah.
So let's talk about this, because the great thing about Trainwreck, and I do say this, a lot of people in Chicago Improv know your material, obviously because both of you have done successful projects, but Trainwreck is different. It's not just a herald that you get up on stage. You guys are improvising a play.
Absolutely, yeah. That's one thing we wanted to do. That was one thing that interested us, was the concept of real-time improvisation. And I forgot how long we started doing this. Was it like 16 years ago or something?
Yeah, it was before I started the main stage. So yeah, it was 13 ago anyway. That's unbelievable.
But we thought of it like that'd be a really fun challenge and something that we could get excited about.
What's the difference for you guys? I mean, you've done so much improv and you've performed heralds and done all sorts of performances on stage in the classical style of improv. What differentiates this project?
Dude, for me, I think, you know, the idea of getting the opportunity to work with someone like Ed was one of those, I don't want to say a dream come true necessarily.
Oh, go ahead.
His ego doesn't need it. But he was one of those guys I really respected, and the chance to get an opportunity to play with a guy that was that smart, that funny, that was enough of a challenge that I thought, you know, when Eddie even pitched, like, well, let's not do a bunch of edits and stuff, let's just do a scene. And I thought, boy, that's going to be a huge challenge for me. I'd never done anything like that before. And that's the biggest part, is to me, it's a challenge. It's like, well, you've painted this house, now you got to live in it. Mm-hmm. And I remember early on, we did one where I said something about, you know, we'll just use the garage door opener. And then four sentences later, I said, we don't even have a garage. But you contradict yourself and you go, boy, it's a lot harder to keep track of all the breadcrumbs you're putting on the path in a show like this.
Yeah. And if you go for like a cheap joke early on and that bombs and you're kind of stuck with the reality of the joke, you just have to sit in that for like another half an hour.
And that's really what the difference is, because, you know, you can, when you say edit, for anyone who's not familiar with an improv show, that's when actors are just going to like just start something fresh. They're going to do something for a minute and then they're like, they kind of walk through and they start something new. But this is an improvised play where you have to stay with what you guys set up.
I think one of the things that appealed about this concept to me early on was that I'm just too lazy to make all those edits to restart a scene, to restart a different character. And I did Bass Prov one time, like right after I left Second City, just had a great time just being one character and sitting there drinking beer and fishing for an hour was so great. And I thought Dan and I could have a lot of fun doing something along that line.
It's ironic that Eddie says that he was too lazy to do the edits and stuff when, to me, the world I was coming from was I had been doing so much of this, heralds and long-form shows where there are 15, 20 scenes in a half-hour show. And to me, I was tired of doing it that way because it seemed like that was just getting too easy. It's like, well, if you don't like what you're doing, just change the channel. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Whereas in this, there was this challenge of, well, you can't be lazy here. Because if you fall asleep at the wheel on this one, it truly is a train wreck.
Well, when you guys started out, we're talking 15 years ago, audiences probably were expecting more of the edit kind of heralds because you guys were so proficient at it. How did the audiences respond to the idea of one improvised play, one scene?
Didn't it work right away, Eddie?
Yeah, it did. Because this was also time, you know, TJ and Dave was like drawing big crowds and Bass Prov, so it was a little more. And, you know, Chicago audiences are just so accepting about anything improv. It's such a weird town in that respect. You could like struggle for a year to like get a written show up. And, you know, get every word right and have it up there and like five people will come to it. And it's like, hey, me and this other guy are going to make, we don't have anything written. They're going to put lights on us for 45 minutes. And all right, there's 100 people show up to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. We were fortunate. Second City really got behind us. They had a series of shows then called Unhinged. And they let us be one of the weekly regulars. And they were taking care of all the publicity, really. And they got people in the audience, and audiences responded. And like Eddie said, you know, the Chicago audience is educated in this improv world so much so that if you get up there and say, we're going to do something a little different, we're going to do real-time improv, which means we're going to take one suggestion and do one scene. Mm-hmm. And they go, oh, got it. Education over.
Let's talk about your guys, because both of you have been improvising for decades now, and Dan out in LA, there's such a community of Chicago improvisers that are there. Eddie, here in Chicago, I mean, you can go on stage whenever you like. What is it about your chemistry that keeps bringing you guys back together to continue Trainwreck?
We just work so well together. I think as what Dan said about me, I feel the same way about him in terms of respect. And Dan's one of those improvisers who has such great acting chops. You just get lost in one of his characters. You know, I think one of the things is there's a certain it's challenging, but it's also a certain amount of comfort. If you feel you got a hot hand, all right, you go get a little jokey if you want. If not, I just got to, you know, if I'm not feeling it because I only improvise once a year, I just got to.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You're mostly writing now?
Yeah. I kind of retired from improv and I to different set of muscles for writing and stuff. But this way, if I just keep talking a little bit or keep Dan talking, he'll you know, he'll get us to the finish line.
You know, for me, it was as a new guy in the improv scene, I watched guys like Ed. Well, Ed in particular. And I said, this guy, you know, they always tell you to play to the top of your intelligence and stay away from blue humor and stuff. Ed was one of those guys that they said, well, look, the rules don't apply to this guy. Right. This guy can play blue, but it's at the top of his intelligence. And that was the first thing that attracted me to him. And then I understudied him on the main stage, and I got an opportunity to walk in his shoes and do the scenes that he did. And I found that there was a lot of joy in those characters and a lot of fun and a lot of playfulness in them. And then the third part of the puzzle was we had a common love of music, a similar taste in music, which gives you something to talk about. And the next thing you know, you go, I like this guy. I'd like to be on stage with this guy. And like Eddie said, I feel like I could be in a scene with him and I could go, hey, look at this magazine. And I don't have to name the magazine. I don't have to do anything. And Ed will go, oh, yeah, that magazine was published in. And whether or not it's true or not, you know, about this made-up magazine, he can weave a line of dialogue and create a story that's believable, that people walk out of there believing what they just heard, forgetting that it's all made up, right? And to me, that brings a lot of freedom. You feel like, well, I don't have to carry this whole thing. I can just say one or two things and respond. And Ed has his characters have opinions, and he's not afraid to get in an argument over the made-up opinion. And I love
That's
that.
That's great.
There's so much fun in that.
Well, for both of you guys, I mean, you've transitioned out of improv. I mean, Dan, you've had success in movies and television. And most specifically, as Eddie said, I mean, you have the combination of being an actor and an improviser. Talk about that relationship, because it shows on a show like Veep, because you could tell that you guys are both doing the script in front of you, but given a little bit of carte blanche to improvise. Talk about, you know, the relationship between being an actor and an improviser while you find work in Hollywood.
Well, you know, for me, right off the bat, when I left Chicago, I went straight to The Daily Show, and there's a lot of improvisation involved, but it's all within a very structured area, and it all had the same point of view, which is this is Jon Stewart's point of view. You just happen to be a different mouth saying it. Mm-hmm. And that was a difficult transition for me. And then coming out to Los Angeles and working a little here, a little there, I would never improvise on any project until they said, if you want to, feel free to play around with this. And it wasn't until I worked on Veep that they said, well, here's the script. Let's read it. Now let's get up on our feet and play with it. Now let's put the script away and let's just improvise where we think this scene would go if we had no script. And to me, that felt like the Second City process of putting together a show.
Yeah, right.
Of here's a scenario. I don't have the dialogue, so let's improvise it. And to me, I immediately found out, oh, this is why I've been studying and practicing this stuff for 15 years. As far as, you know, the part about being an actor, I always wanted to be an actor. I don't really know what that means, other than you pretend to be someone you're not, right? So I feel like all improvisers are actors. I think maybe what Eddie's alluding to when he says that, and I've heard it before, people say it about me before, and I feel like it's Martin DeMott was a big teacher at Second City years and years ago, and he always said, I need to believe you first. If I believe you, I can care about you, and if I care about you, then I might find something you say funny. So I just said, if you say so, and that's always been my approach ever since.
Eddie, you know, for you, I mean, you've done a lot of work writing. You just talked about only getting on stage to improvise once a year. But you've translated that work in improvisation and being on stage at Second City to a career in writing. I mean, you're in the writer's room right now at Second City. Talk about how improv influences the work that you're doing now.
I think the great thing, it's the yes and attitude and bringing it to the written page. It really helps with flow. And like people talk about writer's block and there's no wood to knock, but I rarely get that. Sometimes I'm not in the right mood, because if I have to write something, you start a scene, or you just start it. You mm-hmm. make an initiation and another character in your head will follow it up. And sometimes, you know, you look at it and go like, oh, it's crap. Like, oh, well, why is it crap? Well, it wouldn't be crap if I change that around. So that helps. I think it's being part of it is not being afraid to fail and almost embracing the failure. I love tanking a scene second behind, just knocking it out of the park, doing a mediocre ass scene. Like, why did I even bother? Why did I even bother getting up here? But tanking, humiliating yourself in front of people, second best feeling out there you could get on stage.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah. Well, this is funny because I have a ton of tech people that come through here, business people we have on the show, and they have this strange positive relationship with failure where they're all everything about what they're incubating here at 1871 or anywhere in Chicago. If you haven't failed, you haven't lived. There's
absolutely.
And it feels very improv-like, yeah.
Yeah, you go out and you tank, and it's kind of horrible at first, but then, you know, you got 10 fingers, 10 toes. It's an improv scene. Who cares? If I was developing a medical device and I kind of failed at that, then there'd be, you know, I'd feel a lot worse. But it's entertainment.
What's your relationship to failure, Dan?
I have the exact same story as Eddie. It's a little more difficult now on, you know, on the set of a television show or something where – if you're going to fail, there's 120 people standing there, some of them holding heavy equipment while they're waiting for you to get it right. That can be a little embarrassing. But there's time for failure in rehearsal before we shoot, and there are certainly times where they go, okay, this one's for fun. And when they do that, and on Veep in particular, they will always say, okay, we got this. Let's do one for fun now. And the one for fun is the one where you go, great, this is the one where I am going to fail. And maybe you fail, and maybe you kill it, but it doesn't really matter.
You know, it's interesting. Are you seeing more and more people in Hollywood adopt that principle, that philosophy? It seems like more and more television that's making its way to, you know, the FXs and the and cable channels seem to have that spirit, that improv spirit. Are you seeing, as an actor in Hollywood, a change, a more of a push towards a let's do one for fun?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the reason for it is that more and more actors are coming to television and films from an improv background. For years out here, the big comedy casting directors, and I'm going to leave someone out, but I'll just say, you know, Allison Jones, Gene McCarthy, and Wendy O'Brien, Jewel Bestrop, they're casting a lot of these big comedies, and they're looking for people that have improv backgrounds because they know that what that means is if there's enough time to do a little extra something, this is an actor that's going to be able to give you a little something extra. So more and more actors are looking for that. So they're going to the Second City. They're going to I.O., they're going to the UCB, the PAC Improv, all these different places that are teaching improvisation as its own individual art form. But you can use it as a tool in your bag when you're an actor.
Let me ask you this as we wrap up. You know, Trainwreck, like you said, Eddie, you're only getting together. You know, Dan's in L.A., you're in Chicago or Milwaukee, you're coming to Chicago. You know, what's it going to take? I mean, do you see you guys getting together once a year kind of thing to bring the train wreck back? Or do you have plans to continue train wreck in a different capacity?
I don't know any plans we have other than just to – it's fun to do it once a year. I mean, it's pretty laid back. I remember the one rehearsal, quote-unquote rehearsal we had is we met at a bar like the day before the show, like what's the dress code going to be and what Sabbath song are we going to come out to? That was it. And then, like,
the truth.
There's like, we did 10 years without doing it, and, you know, no warm ups or anything. You just go out there and do it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. If someone wants to give us a long run somewhere, I'm not opposed to it, but it's doing it once a year is kind of helps keep it special, right, Dan?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, this is the third year in a row that we're doing it. I think one of those years we did it twice because we did it just to do it, and then we got brought back to do it for CIF.
Right.
Yeah. But really, it's been like our plan was like, yeah, maybe we'll do something with this. Yeah, sure. We're busy. You know? And
quote, hold on. Dan's busy. I lack ambition. Let's get this straight.
Oh, trust me. I lack ambition as well. I've just been busy. But it is that thing where it's like, for me, somewhere around winter, I start to think, man, I'd like to go back to Chicago, see Eddie, do the show. You want to do that, Ed? Sure. And the next thing I know, I get an email from Allison Riley, and we're doing the show.
There you go. That's living the life, guys. Eddie Furman, Dan Bacadal, Trainwreck's annual train wreck, we'll call it that. Annual train wreck is going to be Wednesday night at the Second City ETC stage. Eddie Furman, Dan Bacadal, thanks for joining me, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Who does that?
Who does that?
Who does that?
Who
Wow, what a day today. Just amazing. I mean, spring is definitely in the air. And that means the Chicago Botanic Garden will soon be blooming with spectacular color. In a new WGN series on interesting jobs across Chicago, Kim Gordon does some digging on who does that.
Inch by inch, row by row, I'm gonna make this garden go.
Well, it's a little more complicated than that. The process to pick the right color palette and layout is done way in advance, like a year.
We're growing about 65,000 spring annuals. So that includes the vegetables and all the plants that are used for hanging baskets and the containers and everything that you see in the components to it.
Tim Pollock is a floriculturist. He describes the rainbow of colors you'll see this spring.
We have a lot of yellow. We have a kind of a lighter pink, very pastel this spring. There's always a predominance of orange. We've been using a lot more orange. Orange is kind of a trendy color right now.
Chris Jarenkowski has been at this job for 39 years and puts the final stamp of approval on the layouts. Now here's what you won't see in the 26 gardens.
I don't like to see a lot of white in spring, you know, spring flowers. We've been looking at white all winter long, or primary colors, like a lot of red and yellow together. We can do better than that.
You know, there's a lot more to it than just picking the right color.
The most fun is looking at the public, watching, and they're just going crazy over it. They're taking pictures, they're doing selfies, and that's the most rewarding.
I'm Kim Gordon, and now you know who does that.
To get a behind-the-scenes look and hear additional interviews from the Chicago Botanic Garden, head to our website, WGNradio.com. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Tonight, we continue Candidate Week. There are several tight, contentious races in the area, and we here on the download wanted to introduce some of the candidates running for office in the Illinois primary, which will be decided next Tuesday night, 1 week from tonight. Instead of a debate format, we decided to go more back-to-back, casual interviews. Give each major candidate equal time, similar questions, topics. Joining me tonight to help with the interviews, once again, Mike Fouché.
Good to be here.
Mike is the man behind AlderTrack.com, a subscription news site that covers all things Illinois politics. He's a regular here on the program. So tonight, we focused, last night we did the state Senate race with Patricia Van Pelt and Bob Fioretti.
Yeah, the West Side.
Tonight, we focus on the Democratic primary for the office of Cook County State's Attorney. The incumbent Anita Alvarez is being challenged by former Chief of Staff of the Cook County Board President President Tony Preckwinkle, Kim Fox, and former Cook County prosecutor Donna Moore, who is our first guest tonight. Moore was a federal prosecutor and a prosecutor with the state's attorney's office. She's currently the managing partner of the Chicago office of the law firm Fox Rothschild. Ms. Moore, great to be here. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's start. I mean, one of the things, I mean, you know, I mentioned that you were a federal prosecutor and I mentioned that you were with the state's attorney's office, and that was a couple years ago. I mean, you've been in private law for a while now. Why return? Why run for office of the state's attorney?
Well, the state's attorney's office is broken and the criminal justice system is broken. And if we want to change that, good people have to step up and run. And so rather than just complaining about what's wrong, I decided that I had to get up off the sidelines and go back into the public sector and run for office. So that's what I'm doing.
So, you know, I'm curious. I mean, you've hired former gang leader Gator Bradley.
Yep.
As your urban interpreter. That's what you're calling him. And so do you have a problem relating to minority communities? Why do you need an urban interpreter?
Well, it's urban interpreter is what he calls himself. He's part of my campaign team and part of helping me reach out to all different kinds of communities. Gator has contacts not only in the African-American community, but in the white community. And he's been great. He, both my opponents have, you know, questioned my hiring of Gator because he's a convicted felon. And yet they talk about restorative justice and giving ex-felons an opportunity to rehabilitate themselves and get back into society. And so rather than just talk about it, I believe in actually doing it. And Gator's a perfect example. He's been 40 years on the right side of the law. He's been married. He's married for 30 plus years. His kids have all gone to college. He's written a book. I wish I could bottle what he has and give it to everybody so when they come out of prison, they don't become repeat offenders.
So let's put it on the flip side a little bit and talk about something that police officers are concerned a lot about, which is in Chicago and Cook County, police officers have to check with a state's attorney or an assistant state's attorney before they can charge a felony. It's called felony review.
Correct.
And so a lot of cops hate it because they want to be able to charge somebody with what it is that they saw, and they don't want to have somebody interfere with that. What do you think of felony review?
Well, felony review is a really important part of the office. And the issue right now with felony review is that the assistants that are there aren't trained and don't always know the right thing to charge. And so there's a lot of frustration with the police about what happens in felony review. Ms. Alvarez changed the way it worked a bit when she got into office. I would change it because I don't think it's effectively being run right now. She has it countywide. Used to be city and suburban felony review. But the issue is, just by way of an example, there was a case a couple months ago where the police were chasing a car. There were gunshots being exchanged. They curbed the car. They arrest the three people in the car. They confiscate the gun. They take it to felony review, and the response they get from felony review is, well, we don't know what to charge because we don't know which person shot the gun. All three of these folks had extensive criminal records. The police overrode the state's attorney in felony review. They go to bond court. The assistant state's attorney in bond court dismisses the case, lets the three defendants go, and lo and behold, a couple days later, they see the error of their ways. They charge the three, but they can't find them now.
So you think it's good because it makes for stronger cases that go to court?
Well, felony review is a good way to keep cases from clogging up the system that aren't good, where you don't have the evidence to charge, where it might be a low-level drug offense, and right now we don't want to charge those offenses. Perhaps we give a citation. But the assistants in felony review also have to know when to charge and what to charge so the case properly gets to trial and you get a conviction.
So what's the difference between how it is that you charge a police officer and how you charge a regular citizen? So in the circumstances that we went through with Laquan McDonald case, how is that handled? How should that be handled differently?
Well, the way I think it should be handled is this, and I put out an op-ed on it with Sam Adam. There seems to be a concern, first of all, about you need to have a special prosecutor do this. And this is only a discussion that we are having under Anita Alvarez's term. We didn't discuss this. There weren't issues before Anita Alvarez took office. Her decisions are based on politics and not evidence. So what you need to do is negate the perception that the state's attorney's office can't be independent when reviewing a police case because they work closely with the police in most of their courtrooms. I would like to form a special unit made up of former assistant U.S. attorneys who don't deal with Chicago police on a day-to-day basis in their courtrooms. That group would report direct to me, so they wouldn't be dealing with intermediary supervisors who also deal with the cops on a day-to-day basis. They would be the first responders on a scene of a police shooting, not IPRA. You know, I don't know how
How does IPRA fit into all this then?
As far as I'm concerned, a police shooting is a criminal case until the state's attorney's office says it's not. And then IPRA can take their disciplinary action against the police. But there shouldn't be a non-law enforcement agency telling the state's attorney's office, who's elected by the people, whether or not a crime has been committed. That, to me, doesn't make sense. And if I were Anita Alvarez the past 7 years, I would have been yelling from the rooftops. And this is not a legal creation. This is an agreement with the city and the police department. As state's attorney, I don't agree to IPRA taking over my cases until I determine it's not a criminal case. And then my unit, made up of former federal prosecutors, reports to me. I issue a report that says why or why not I'm going to indict. Mm-hmm. And in that way, I'm transparent to the public, and people can start to trust how we're doing indictments again.
You know, let me ask you this, because in a recent forum, the incumbents called you and Kim Fox out for— You know, f- focusing on one issue about confidence in the justice system. She said there's much more to this job than just that. There's more this job entails. And she sort of intimated that you and the other challenger weren't up to it. What's your response to that?
Well, listen, Anita Alvarez has been a serial screw-up on every major case that has come through her office. She has put this county on the verge of civil unrest. We have marches down the street telling her, asking her, begging her to resign. So the fact of the matter is she's been in the office for 29 years. She's been state's attorney for 7, and the office is in worse shape than when she took over. And the city and the criminal justice system are in worse shape when she took over. So if that's what 29 years in as a career prosecutor get you, thank you very much. I don't want her record. I have had the ability to not only be a state prosecutor, a federal prosecutor, general counsel for a state agency, and I've been in private practice doing civil litigation, doing pro bono work where I've gotten pardons for young men who've gotten mixed up in the criminal justice system and corrected their lives. You have to have a broad base of experience on all sides so you can understand justice. Not convictions, but justice, because that's the role of the prosecutor.
Now, this job, and it's the state's attorney in Cook County. I mean, this is a job, as we've seen in the last 3 or 4 months, that grabs headlines, and it seems that it is a political job. It is where politicians are at. Do you feel like you have the experience to be a leader of not only the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, but be a leading politician in that office?
I don't like the term politician these days, because politician has become synonymous with doing nothing, putting your own self-interest first before the public self-interest. So to me, the state's attorney's office isn't a political job. It is a job where you follow the evidence, no matter where it leads, no matter to whomever it leads.
But it's a lightning rod. I mean, whether it's supposed to be or not, right?
Well, here's the problem. The problem is that the establishment, listen, both my opponents are supported by the established political ruling class here. You got Ed Burke and Mike Madigan supporting Anita Alvarez. You have Joe Berrios and Tony Preckwinkle doing everything for Kim Fox. And the problem is that they want to control the power of indictment, and it shouldn't be controlled by politicians. The people of Cook County have to take back the political system.
So if you became state's attorney, would you start looking into corruption issues in the county then?
Shocking, but I would.
So what's an example of something that you would open up and start looking at?
Well, for instance, the Sun-Times reported that Ms. Preckwinkle and Ms. Fox traded contracts. County contracts for political contributions. That to me is problematic. The fact that our aldermen have tied the hands of their inspector general to look at how they implement programs with our tax dollars. I mean, why can't the inspector general look at it? What's going on?
So would you investigate the city council? Like, for instance, Ed Burke's workman comp program. Would you look at
that? If there's evidence that would cause me to open an investigation, I would investigate, because the Cook County State's Attorney has to be independent so that she is willing to prosecute crime no matter who commits it. Yes.
Donna Moore is a candidate for State's Attorney, Cook County State's Attorney, in the Democratic primary, which is next Tuesday. Let's take a break. Come back. We'll talk more about the candidacy and the office here on The Download. Stay with us. It's The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's candidate week here on the show. Mike Fouché is with me. We're talking to candidates for the Democratic primary for Cook County State's Attorney. Tonight, Donna Moore is here. Before the break, we kind of started talking about the criminal justice system. There's a lot about reform. The Cook County president today, Tony Preckwinkle, set out an agenda, a comprehensive plan for reform of criminal justice. What's your take on that?
Well, first of all, I wonder why Tony Preckwinkle put that out and not Kim Fox. But again, in my mind, one in the same. They're one and the same. We have talked a lot about reform in the system and how to get better outcomes with the money that we're spending. You have to look at each case individually, but there are situations where career offenders need to be treated harshly and differently than a first-time low-level offender. And what I believe the president is talking about is how we can improve how we deal with low-level nonviolent offenders, whether they're in the juvenile system or in the adult system. And it involves alternative punishments. So if somebody is mentally ill, if somebody is drug addicted, you know, what I have suggested is a mental health policy whereby you take these people and you don't put them in Cook County Jail, which doesn't do them any good. And we instead have licensed mental health care facilities that are cheaper than Cook County Jail.
Well, the sheriff has been all over this issue. And to be fair, I mean, the state's attorney, the incumbent Anita Alvarez right now, is, I mean, she went out of her way for marijuana offenses. She's looking for different ways to change the way that they prosecute low-level crimes. Is it enough?
Well, Anita Alvarez was a day late and a dollar short on low-level marijuana offenses. You know, other offices throughout the country were doing this 5 years ago. She became a reformer when she had candidates running against her for her reelection for this third term. So to say that she's a reformer rings a bit hollow.
Is she a hang 'em high kind of prosecutor?
She is about convictions and not about justice. And I think we've seen that in her office. She fights wrongful convictions. She fights the release of people. She drags her feet in having people who are not guilty of crimes who are imprisoned. You know, on one of the editorial boards, she said, no, she welcomes this information. And yet, if you read the Northwestern protests, discussion about his experience with the office, it's quite the opposite. So I don't view her as a reform-minded state's attorney.
So speaking of reform, you know, one of the things that's come up a lot in the past few months has been issues with how the Fraternal Order of Police, Chicago Fraternal Order of Police union contract with Chicago is set up, and that there are certain stipulations that police officers get. Are there problems with the contract that limit the state's attorney from being able to do their job well?
Well, the state's attorney obviously doesn't have control over the bargaining or the union contract with the Chicago Police. And let me just say this. You know, most of our police officers are doing a darn good job out there. I mean, they're putting their lives on the line every single day to keep us safe. They have to make split-second decisions. And, you know, hindsight has 20/20 vision. But that said, they need to understand where the line is. And the line is the law. And if they cross that line, nobody's above the law. I don't care if you're white, black, or wearing navy blue. And in my mind, Anita Alvarez has not drawn that line, has not communicated that to the Chicago Police. And because of that, I think officers don't know. Because, wow, if they can hide this case, if I'm not going to get prosecuted on this case, then maybe it's okay if I perjure myself on the stand. But then, take the Glenview police case, then if it becomes a front page news story, the politics enter into it. And within a day, after waiting almost a year, Anita Alvarez.
So you believe that the
case.
Job of the state's attorney is to set that line, to let police officers know that you can't cross this line?
Yes. Because you have to prosecute crime no matter who commits it. A police officer isn't above the law. So I think we have to recognize that they have a very tough job. I'd like to see more joint training between the police officers and the state's attorney's office so both sides understand what's needed and be flexible, but you can't cross the line.
Let me ask you this, because this is a big part of prosecuting in Cook County is race. I mean, there is so much to be said about the jails being filled with black and brown people. They're not being unfairly treated by the police department. You see the protests after videos come out from Laquan McDonald's and others. You know, for you as someone who wants to be the state's attorney, what's your relationship? What do you say to the minority communities of Cook County when it comes to this office?
The state's attorney's office needs to be consistent in how it prosecutes. So if, in fact, they're going to take a low-level drug offense of, you know, a 16-year-old up in Skokie or Glencoe, and they're going to let the parent come and pick up that child and not charge. We have to have the same policy in Englewood. And you have to be out in the communities. So they begin, we have to re-earn community trust in the state's attorney's office because we have lost it, and in particular in black and brown communities. So the state's attorney has to be out there. They have to do things not just related to criminal justice, but to help the community in general. And in that way, if you're open and you're consistent and you're fair in your policies, you will regain the community trust.
Donna Moore is the candidate for state's attorney, Cook County state's attorney in the Democratic primary, which will be next Tuesday, March 15th. Thank you for coming in tonight.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. Coming up, Kim Fox and state's attorney Anita Alvarez will have them for Candidate Week tonight. That's coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Mike Fouché from AlderTrack.com is with me. You know, as we're talking about the state attorney's race, and if you would have thought about the primary,
yeah,
I would say 3 months ago,
right,
this would be the race.
Oh,
you probably
absolutely
wouldn't even be thinking about the presidential
no
race because you're like,
no
well,
questions
by the time it got here. And it is still very important, and obviously it still has a lot of power, but there are some low-level ticket state
yeah
rep races
and you,
that
you know
are
what's
becoming
awesome
there.
Is that competing and spending, all right? So, I mean, we're somewhere around $3 million, $3.5 million that people are spending on the state's attorney's race for all of Cook County. But then right there up with it is Ken Duncan and Juliana Stratton. They're already at $3.5 million for that little dinky district.
What
14,000 people.
I mean, it's got to be a playbook, man, because, you know, I don't know much about primaries, but you throw a bunch of money in, you throw a bunch of mailers in, it starts to sniff out the newspapers because the newspapers started writing about Ken Duncan buying votes
yeah
and Stratton.
Well, they can't even buy more mail now.
Now,
they're doing crazy
it's got,
stuff.
Now it's got the mainstream. It's becoming the second, third story on the 10
yeah
o'clock news. I mean, this
right
has it almost has catapulted itself into the race to watch, and that probably favors Juliana Stratton.
You know, you think, and you know, so before I did this whole journalism thing, I actually was a political consultant for a while, and I ran some races and even some state legislative races. And even in really high profile races, I've never worked on a race that was this high profile for a state rep, but even in really high profile races, people are not paying attention. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
and you're only, you know, it's only votes for that district.
Right,
so it's not
right
like
it's only that district. People
listening
are
right now in Schaumburg, you know, who, why do I care?
Going along, yeah, doing their own thing, you know. I mean, they got stuff to do. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't have to think about voting all the time. I mean, I think about it all the time because I'm a political reporter, and so, you know, I'm kind of a sick and twisted individual. But average human beings, like my wife, okay, she doesn't think about that stuff all the time. She's got other things to do.
It's, I mean, obviously the president coming out for Stratton to,
right,
to cut TV and radio ads to endorse Stratton. There was some newspaper stuff today saying this is a Chicago way, Madigan.
Yeah.
You know, which Duncan quickly grabbed on saying, yes, Obama, Madigan, everybody
yeah
on that side. I'm a different kind of Democrat.
You know, I wonder, I mean, from some reports from Rich Miller, who's a great reporter in the State House, he was saying that Mike Madigan has been working on Obama for a long time in order to get him to do this advertisement, and so many, many months. And although Rich didn't say so, you know, I'm wondering if there's I have a certain conjecture that if you might recall, Ken Duncan was being kind of a loudmouth when the president spoke
yeah
in Springfield.
Yeah, exactly.
And the president pointed at him and said, all right, Ken, we'll talk later. And so Ken Duncan then took that clip and twisted it a
right
little bit.
We
to
talked
make
about
it into
that last
radio
night.
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
Like it's his thing, and that kind of
right
may have miffed the president.
I'm pretty sure El Presidente was not too cool with his words.
You
being
know what
twisted.
I do like about it? I mean, the president obviously has bigger fish to fry, and but this reminds us all in Chicago that the president's from here, that he did
right
have a life in
and,
Chicago,
well,
and
he knew Ken Duncan.
Back. Yeah, he knew
and
Ken Duncan.
Duncan, and I think that maybe he's not too pleased with his old, you know, compatriot.
Well, I mean, the other races we talked about, the surprise to me with the primary is that, you know, the parties got their stuff in order at the Senate level for Mark Kirk's
right
seat. It seems like both parties said, this is our candidate.
Right.
And there's not going to be a primary.
Right.
Because Tammy Duckworth is, it's surprising to me, it's a head scratcher that she's sort of unscathed, going to win the primary, even though she's got some formidable challenges. And Andrea Zopp. And on the Republican side, you know, they said he's our guy, even though early on in the summertime, I remember Greg Hines reported that, you know, some Republicans are like, I think we could do it better if we had a different candidate.
You know, when you're running a statewide primary, you know, running a statewide primary is very different than a countywide primary because, well, you'd forget, Illinois is huge, okay? And, you know, I've worked on statewide primaries in Illinois, too. And going from Chicago to Peoria to DuQuoin to Carbondale to, you know, all over, it's a lot of time. And it's very hard to cover all that ground. And there are a lot of people all over the state that have to be touched and have to be convinced. And, you know, unless you actually start campaigning a couple of years in advance, it's very difficult in order to build relationships with all those people in time. And so when you have somebody who jumps in that already has support of a number of party leaders, big party leaders like Mike Madigan or other statewide party leaders.
Talking about Tammy Duckworth.
Tammy Duckworth had a lot of high-level support very early on. And, you know, all these people in these different parts of the state, they're like, okay, I guess I'll go along with that. And, you know, there's another thing, too, which is, there are more Democratic voters in the 19th Ward of Chicago than there are in Peoria.
Right.
So, you know, if you have a lot of Democratic support locked up in the city,
it's hard to win if you don't have the city.
That's right.
You know, it's setting up. I mean, the primary, let's say that the polls are correct and it's going to be Mark Kirk, obviously, unopposed, and Tammy Duckworth. That is a heavyweight fight here in when it comes to Illinois politics coming up in the general election in November.
Yeah.
That's the one to look at.
Yeah, I think so.
Because a lot of these are just Democrat, like the state rep races and even the state's attorney's race. Once the Democratic primary is over, that's who's going to win in the general.
Right. And I think it's also going to be interesting from an ideological standpoint because Kirk is your classic Illinois Republican. He's moderate. He's not a, you know, Bible thumper or, you know, any kind of a radical conservative. And Tammy Duckworth, you know, she doesn't have that much of a record, but, you know, what her record is not much of a radical either. She comes out of the Clintonista wing of the party and, you know, was kind of made by Rahm Emanuel, actually. Emanuel picked her out of a lineup, basically, in order to get her to run for Congress for the first time. So, you know, I think that it's going to be very interesting because the two are not going to have a whole lot to divide them in a lot of ways.
Let me ask you this. You know, the primary, Mayor Rahm Emanuel took a pretty low profile. You know, he's not stepping up. He's said some things about Donald Trump, but he is not, people are not lining up.
He's a ghost.
Yeah. And, you know, he's a big player. I mean, this is kind of what drives him. I mean, he's the guy. He's the architect. He's put this stuff together. You know, he loves to campaign. You know, what are you hearing about Mayor Emanuel and his role, not only just here in the primary, but the Democrats in the general?
He has no good news. Mm. There's no good news. So let me give you an example. There's this tiny little thing called the Working Families Task Force that the mayor put together way back in June. And the whole idea was it was going to be a layup and they were going to make some recommendations about how there should be longer sick leave, mandated sick leave in the city and that kind of stuff. And at AlderTrack, we've been following the Working Families Task Force. We've been waiting and waiting and waiting for them to make an announcement. And there was originally going to be one in November. Then they're like, oh, January. And then they're like, crickets. And the reason why that we believe, and we're sort of hearing through back channels, is that the mayor's office has no good news and nobody wants to do anything that the mayor wants to do. He's trying to pass a $6 million tobacco tax and he can't get that passed.
$6 million is not a lot of money.
It's
when
nothing,
it comes to,
and it's tobacco.
Right.
So, you know, the fact that he is having trouble passing anything is a really, really important
point. Let me ask
you,
does that hurt a Tammy Duckworth that so far Mayor Emanuel has kind of lost his mojo?
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, I think you can count on Republicans just plastering her with everything Rahm Emanuel. And, you know, already Chicago is a dirty word in the suburbs. So, you know, I think that, you know, Rahm Emanuel, Chicago, Tammy Duckworth, I think you can be pretty sure of that.
Mike Fouché is with AlderTrack.com, subscription news site that covers all things Illinois, Chicago politics. Let's take a break. When we come back, we got to talk. I'm fascinated by the DePaul basketball arena.
Oh man,
that's one that's coming up here. And then you know we've been talking on the show. You and I have been talking every single week about this teacher strike. Now it's turned into an action. Demonstration.
Yeah, words matter, man.
Yeah, words matter. So we'll talk more about that coming up here after the break. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. Mike Fouché with me in studio. Coming up at 9 o'clock after the news, Kim Fox. Then at 9:30, we'll have the state's attorney incumbent, Anita Alvarez, as we continue Candidate Week. We're off tomorrow night because of the Blackhawks. We'll be back on Thursday where we'll have Juliana Stratton and hopefully Ken Duncan. Ken's a regular on our show, but he's not. His people are.
And I want him to be here.
Yeah,
it would be great. I want to hear his story.
Yeah, and he can hold his own. He knows what he's doing.
Oh man,
and he's been great. He's been a great guest on our program. He's been on twice. So it's like for me, I just think it's more like who, what. Like
right.
What's happening in their
exactly
their office over there.
Right.
So hopefully he'll get it together and be here on Thursday. But Juliana Stratton will be, so that'll be good.
Good.
All right. So you and I, let's talk about Chicago, because the DePaul Arena is something that has been almost like a political albatross.
Yeah, right.
Because for years now, people have talked about, why do we need another sports stadium, especially a small sports stadium next to McCormick Place?
So I want to underline here, I actually grew up in the 70s next door to DePaul University.
Love DePaul basketball.
I actually would walk down Sheffield Avenue when I was a kid and see Ray Meyer. Met Ray Meyer when he was at the height of the game, the whole thing.
We just had Joey Meyer on not too long ago at the big table. Great. I mean, the memories of DePaul basketball, they are Chicago. We understand.
Right. So, you know, we have in our mind sort of like DePaul basketball. But the reality is that DePaul, they're playing out at the Allstate Arena right now, okay, which is out in, where is that?
Rosemont,
okay.
Right, isn't that Rosemont?
Yeah, it's Rosemont. Rosemont. It used to be the Rosemont Horizon, remember that?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so anyway, they're playing out there, and they have an average, they just ended their season, they have an average of 2,600 fans at men's basketball games.
That's not a good showing.
No, it's not.
I would love for the research team to see what the average is for a Chicago Sky game, because they also play at the Allstate Arena.
Interesting, right?
I bet you they draw better.
I bet they do better. Yeah. I bet they do better. So here's the thing. DePaul University, they're getting this whole new stadium that's being built largely by the city, down by McCormick Place. And the projections that the city has, you know, they borrowed a lot of money. And in order for the city to be able to cover their nut on this, they have to have an average of 10,000 people go to each DePaul basketball game.
All right, did I hear you right? They need to have 10,000 per night.
Per game, yeah.
Per game when DePaul plays at this stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're averaging at the Allstate Arena 2,600.
That's right. And this was reported by the Chicago Tribune a couple weeks ago.
So they need to up their game by.
Or people have to like 75%. Care. I don't know what you do. You know,
are they assuming that people who are DePaul basketball fans don't go to Rosemont?
I think
it's
that's
far away,
some part
and they
of it.
Think that this will be a place that will attract from the communities that surround McCormick
I think
Place?
That's some part of it. But I mean, like if you compare,
but even so,
like DePaul basketball, you know, like it's not like when you're in Milwaukee, everybody goes to a Marquette game. You know, that's the thing. You go to a Marquette game in Milwaukee. You know, and when you're in Madison, everybody goes to the Badgers game. When you're in Champaign, everybody goes to the Illini game. But it's not like that here. You know.
Let's put aside. I mean, because you know the team could get better, and they could be in a position where you know I don't know they
catch
compete
fire.
For the Big East or whatever
amazing.
It is. Yeah. And but the bigger question is if this stadium fails, or that the studio or the city loses money on the stadium, this is once again another sort of black eye situation for the mayor, because they pushed this through. There was progressive pushback, and a lot of aldermen and progressive politicians and leaders saying we don't need a stadium.
Right.
That's the last thing we need right
now.
Well,
this deal was done 2 years ago,
right?
And things were a little rosier 2 years ago. We didn't know. Well, we sort of knew. But, you know, nobody was really paying attention to how bad the city finances were. And, you know, everyone figured, well, hey, we'll just do this deal and everything will come together and it'll be great. Not so much.
Well, when will this be up for next season? Will it be ready for DePaul basketball?
I think it's a year more than that.
Well, they got plenty of time to flyer.
Right. It'll be great. They'll get better.
There's going to be a lot of people standing in front of L-stops being like, DePaul basketball? You want to come to the stadium? Come to the stadium? All right.
Great college job.
All right. April Fools, the April 1st teachers strike has turned into a demonstration or an action. Which is just a precursor to when they by law can strike, which would be mid-April.
Right, is April 19th. So
is this really going to happen?
I think so. I mean, the teachers are pretty adamant about it. And my personal little network here, which is I'm a CPS parent, some of the teachers are like, April 1st, start looking around for something to do with your kids. I mean, and Karen Lewis, the president of CTU, said, think of it as an extra holiday. Which, hey, boy, that's great. Extra holiday.
So they're essentially saying that April 1st will be an action that will keep your kids out of school.
Yeah.
So it's not like an after school where everyone marches downtown. This is more of a morning, teachers don't show up.
Well, it's not clear, but the fact that Karen Lewis, the president of CTU, said, think of it as an extra holiday, has got me on the phone to, an after school program for my son to hang out with for the day. So, I think that that's what we can expect. And, so really the story here is that the teachers can't strike until the 19th because there's a fact finding that has to be done about their negotiations. And so they, I think, want to be able to do something that will let people know that they're here and they're proud and they're doing something important.
Well, obviously,
because when you get to the 19th, it's almost the end of the year.
Well, I was going to ask you, obviously this is pointed at CPS. Does the Chicago Teachers Union, are they paying attention to Bruce Rauner and the CPS takeover as well? The idea of that? I mean,
I don't think so. I mean, we've asked about it in press conferences and they've said, forget about it. The guy's never going to get anything and it's got to go through the legislature. But,
Senator Van Pelt said tonight.
She said that last night.
But the situation you laid out, that he could go around the legislature.
Well, it was a report from Reuters, Dave McKinney at Reuters. What he said is that the governor has the possibility where he could declare CPS insolvent, which would effectively make it so that they could no longer borrow.
Right.
And that would push them into his arms.
He could do essentially declare an emergency.
He could.
That's like a floodplain, essentially. The CPS is a floodplain.
Right. And so the thing that's interesting about this is that it's not necessarily a legal maneuver. It's really more about being able to push somebody with the opinion of the bond markets.
All right. Mike Fouché, AllTheTrack.com, the site that covers all things Chicago politics. All right, coming up, the 9 o'clock hour, we continue Candidate Week. We're going to have Kim Fox coming up first after the news, and Anita Alvarez after her at 9:30. Stay with us. It's a download. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Tonight, we continue Candidate Week. As we've said all along, there are several tight, contentious races in the area, and we here on the download wanted to introduce you to some of the candidates running for office in the Illinois primary, which will be decided next Tuesday night. Instead of the debate format, we're going back-to-back interviews, giving each major candidate equal time. Joining me tonight to help with the interviews, of course, Mike Fouché from AllTheTrack.com.
Good to be here.
Good to see you. And our next guest is candidate Kim Fox. Kim is a former chief of staff to the Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle. Fox was also an assistant state's attorney for Cook County. She also worked in the Cook County Public Guardian's Office, and she is running for Cook County State's Attorney. Ms. Fox, good to see you.
Good to see you again. Thanks for having me back.
All right, so let's get right to it. Well, I mean, you were on the program. We talked, I think it was way back.
Fall?
Yeah, it's like fall. But, we're introducing you as a candidate. I mean, a lot has changed since then. Talk about why you want to be state's attorney, because this is obviously a very lightning rod job.
Certainly. So our criminal justice system has been broken for quite some time. And when I was here in the fall, we talked a lot about, our streets still being ravaged with violence. And we had our jails that were filled with people that were there for nonviolent offenses and making sure that our criminal justice system was responsive to the needs of public safety. And at the same time, being smart with the use of our resources. Since I've been here, of course, there's been a lot of talk around police accountability, and there has been a continued demonstration by the current state's attorney of her inability to deal with police misconduct cases in a way that would lead people to have faith and trust in our criminal justice system. So I've spent my entire career dealing with these issues, and, as I said before, I feel like I'm uniquely qualified to take on these challenges, all of them. And so I want to run for this office to restore faith and integrity in our system.
So your opponents have said that you're basically just a puppet of Tony Preckwinkle and Joe Berrios, the Cook County Democratic chairman. So how do you make the case that you're actually independent? What are you going to do to demonstrate that you're not beholden to the establishment?
Certainly. I'm beholden to the people of Cook County who elect me. I spent my entire career working on these issues, as I said before. I have worked 15 years in public service before I met Toni Preckwinkle. I never knew her before I came to work for her at the county. I spent 12 years as an assistant state's attorney, a job that I absolutely loved until the end when the current state's attorney
took over. No, there's no doubt. You have a great resume and you have a great background, but how are you going to set yourself apart?
I mean, I think I set myself apart by saying I've committed my career to this, and the office, the oath to uphold justice and having justice be blind is what I'm going to uphold to. The president's support of my campaign, along with the others, both in the political and civic and, you know, the newspaper endorsements are all great. But it's the voter, it's the citizens of Cook County who I'm running for this office for.
Let me ask you this, Kim, because you're right. When we had you on before, this was before Laquan McDonald.
Yeah.
This was, you know, we were talking about other issues in criminal justice. But, you know, talking about that case in particular, and you've been very outspoken about how that was handled, the incumbent will say that it's a complex issue when it comes to police and investigating and prosecuting police officers. How do you fix the system to make sure that if police officers are like the ones we saw on the video commit a crime, that they're prosecuted in due time?
Yeah, I mean, they are complex cases, but the Laquan McDonald is not an outlier for Anita Alvarez. We also have the Dante Servin case. We also have cases of police officers who have been charged with perjury 13 months after they were caught in a courtroom, having perjured themselves by a judge. I mean, the issues around police accountability lie with the state's attorney. It is the state's attorney's responsibility to hold police officers who engage in misconduct accountable, responsible. The overwhelming majority of our police officers are good, hardworking individuals who run into the face of danger. When those who break the law, aren't held accountable, our system goes into chaos. What I will say is Chicago, Cook County, has a long-standing history of not dealing with police misconduct cases. We are the only place in the country that has a police torture reparations fund. We literally, you know, cleaned out, you know, death row and jail cells for people who went to prison for crimes they didn't commit based on misconduct by police. So we're long overdue. Laquan McDonald's tip of the iceberg and Anita Alvarez's failures in there are bright. But this is a long issue that we've not dealt with.
Is there a difference between the way police officers and average citizens are dealt with when they commit crimes?
There shouldn't be. I mean, they absolutely shouldn't be. If you're talking about a police officer who commits a crime like
is
in
there
the McDonald
today,
case.
Today, is there a difference?
I think there's a perception that there's a difference. I mean, I'm not there in the state's attorney's office to tell you how she makes the determinations of whether or not to charge a police officer. What I can tell you is that we look at the cases, we look at the perjury cases or lack thereof that have been charged. When you talk to people who work in the criminal justice system, who will tell you that those types of incidents happen on a regular basis. Or when you have, as I said, a case out of the suburbs where police officers were caught on the stand lying under oath. And Anita Alvarez waited 13 months to charge that case. In other cases where folks do that, and there's a case where someone recanted and she charged a recantation with perjury, she'll do it. And so when you don't see the data backing up that you treat people the same, the perception is you don't until you can prove otherwise.
You know, she in a forum just recently, Anita Alvarez sort of suggested that this was sort of a one-note complaint to her, that the sort of, you know, confidence in the justice system, that was it. But there's much more to the job of being the state's attorney. And she said that both you and Donna Moore, you just weren't up to that challenge. Well, how do you respond to that?
What I would say is that our criminal justice system is broken. And the only way you fix it is to know what the problem is. And her inability to acknowledge that the system is not working effectively demonstrates her inability to fix it. I mean, again, I ran for this office before Laquan McDonald. There have been a litany of issues with the state's attorney's office under her leadership, and her absolute refusal. Everything is someone else's fault. She is not responsible for anything. It's judges won't prosecute or judges won't convict police officers. It's witnesses won't give me information. Real leadership is exercising good judgment, setting the standard, and taking responsibility. She has no responsibility in her mind for the failures of her office, and her judgment is what's gotten her to this point.
So speaking of leadership, what sort of leadership does the city of Chicago need for the Chicago Police Department? I mean, in order to make the changes necessary.
I think we need a leader who understands the complexity of the city of Chicago and the longstanding history between the relationship between the police department and some of our most vulnerable communities. I think we need someone who understands that we have to work with the community in real partnership in order to deal with these issues. You're also going to need someone who's able to rebuild morale. I mean, the morale in the police department right now is rather low, given what's been happening over the last 6 months. And they need to feel supported and that their leadership has their back. But also one that says, you guys are held to a standard that is high because you've taken this oath, because you have this responsibility, but you will be supported.
Do you have confidence that Rahm Emanuel and the police board will make the right choice?
I certainly want to believe that we have to go into a direction where people believe that the police department is going to operate in a transparent, fair, and credible way. I haven't been a part of the process to see how they're making those decisions, but we cannot afford a misstep in terms of having the right leadership in that office.
Kim Fox is running for state's attorney, Cook County state's attorney. When we come back, we'll talk more with you about your platforms and about some of the bigger issues as well surrounding race and how you would work with that in the office. It's a download here on WGN. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. It's Candidate Week. Tonight, we're talking about the race for state's attorney in Cook County, Democratic primary. In studio with me right now, Kim Fox. Kim Fox is a challenger. Let's talk about, I want to talk about two issues. I want to talk about race, and I also want to talk about politics. Because, you know, one other thing, this the state's attorney is a huge political office. I mean, this is an office where I feel like, you know, you've seen some of the people in from Mayor Daley to Dick Devine was in for a long time. Even with Anita Alvarez, you've seen her after Laquan McDonald just, I mean, draw the ire of community. I mean, are you prepared not just to be the top prosecutor, but to essentially be someone who is a politician, in a political office?
Yeah, I mean, it's an elected office. You are put there by the will of the voters, and you are accountable to the voters who put you there. But I absolutely think you have to, you know, uphold the law, and you have to balance, again, you have to use judgment about what you should and do versus what you can do. And you also have to be able to explain yourself. I think part of the issues that Anita Alvarez has had is not just because it's a political office. It was the lack of transparency. The ire of what happened with Laquan McDonald wasn't because she charged Jason Van Dyke. It was because 400 days went without any information about what was happening in that case. I think you can absolutely do this job, hold yourself accountable to the voters, to the public, but you have to do it in a way that is open and transparent and accountable.
So Mayor Emanuel has talked about having a 90-day waiting period before videos are released. Lisa Madigan, Attorney General Lisa Madigan, has said, well, the standard should be FOIA, which is 14 days. And where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I think we have to be careful when we're using numbers to pick when the public should be given information, particularly as it relates to an open criminal investigation. We have to weigh, you know, the public's need to know versus the integrity of the investigation or the integrity of the case that you're putting together. So, you know, putting out an arbitrary number for me doesn't make sense without knowing the facts of the entire case or what we're dealing with at the time. I certainly think 400 days is ridiculous. I certainly think that we shouldn't have to sue and go to court to get information. I think the standard should be once you know that you've secured that information that's going to be made available anyway at a public hearing, that the public should have it beforehand. But it should not taint the integrity of the investigation that you're doing.
I got to ask about race because the obviously with Laquan McDonald, and you've seen a huge movement towards just a light shone on police and the relationship with communities. You mentioned it a little bit earlier, but just about the level of distrust and mistrust with the Chicago Police Department among Black and brown communities. I mean, if you look at the jails right now, I think this is what we talked about back in the fall, about the idea that it's disproportionate. As you know, running for state's attorney, as state's attorney, what do you say to that? What do you say to minority voters who may want to vote for you, who have had issues like that or feel like there's a mistrust with the prosecutors in this county?
I think it's a conversation that's not just for minority voters. It's for all of us in the county, that we have to start having frank conversations about race in our criminal justice system. I think part of the reason that we've never really addressed the disproportionality issue is that when the topic of race comes up, there's a reluctance to delve into it. There's a reluctance to have difficult conversations. Our county is 25% African American, 25% Latino, and yet they're 86% of our jail population. In our juvenile detention center, it's about 94%. And we know that there are different policing strategies that are done, you know, from in Lawndale versus in Evanston. And the data, you know, if you make data available, we'll be able to show you, are we treating people the same? Are we treating people fairly? And then as it comes to the issue of trust, as I talked about, the relationship with the police, you know, is a longstanding issue for a lot of these communities. When we look at what happened with Burge, when we look at, you know, what was happening in the 70s and 80s and 90s, those are conversations that we've never really addressed. We've written checks, you know, misconduct mm-hmm. checks. We've got a police torture reparations fund. But I think leadership, you know, our lead officials who deal with these issues should be engaged.
Well, that's you. That's going to be you, right? I mean, how do you see yourself interacting with those difficult conversations?
I think
at that
it's
level?
Again, start by acknowledging that we have a problem here, and start by acknowledging that one of the problems is, you know, that we have a racial divide that we need to bridge. And the way that you do it, particularly in those communities of color, is show them the data. Let them see that what they feel, the antidotes, the sense in their community is either backed up and substantiated by data or it's not.
But Mayor Emanuel has been claiming that for a long time. Crime is going down, that there's fewer...
They use data to say that, yeah.
They've been using data for some time. That was McCarthy, Superintendent McCarthy's whole... program, which was constantly repeating that the crime is going down.
But the data we haven't seen is the prosecutor's data, right? And how the prosecutor, we must be clear, is the gatekeeper of the justice system. Police arrest, prosecutors charge. And so the state's attorney, Anita Alvarez, has been reluctant and almost stonewalling being able to see how it is that they make decisions in terms of charging. If we all know, we've talked about this before, if all along racial lines, people use drugs at the same usage rate, and yet, you know, 25% of the people in our jails are there for drugs, and they're overwhelmingly African-American and Latino, we're not arresting and we're not charging at the same rates. So when I'm talking about data, it's like making sure that our system is fair and equitable for all. And that will engender the trust of the people who you're serving, who say that it's not fair and equitable. And we know that because we live in these communities and it doesn't look like it. We have to have those tough conversations.
As we wrap up here, you know, I asked a question at the beginning just about why you want to be state's attorney. And obviously you've seen, you know, the uprising of people when prosecutions go bad, when a police officer is not charged or a grand jury. We've seen that not just here in this county, but in the country. You know, for you, I mean, when you think about wanting to be state's attorney? Are there any thoughts like, yeah, that's a job that I'm not sure that I necessarily want to get in front of?
Absolutely not. I grew up in Chicago, and I grew up, you know, it's well documented, one of the most notorious housing projects in the country. And I grew up believing, you know, in the value of a fair justice system. That's what puts you on even footing. What I've seen in the country, what I've seen here at home, has made me sad for where we've gotten with our criminal justice system. And if good people don't step up and say that we're willing to do the difficult work to make people who live in neighborhoods across this county feel safe and protected, the relationships between law enforcement and communities are secure, then we shouldn't do it. So I'm looking forward to being able to bridge the divide. I'm looking forward to be able to transform a system that has been so fractured, and being a leader in criminal and juvenile justice reform across the country.
Kim Fox is running for state's attorney for the Cook County, or I guess I want to say the County of Cook, but that's so English. County of Cook.
Or World Chicago.
Kim Fox is running for the Democratic primary for the Cook County state's attorney. Kim, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Tonight we continue Candidate Week. Mike Fouché is in the seat next to me. Mike.
Good to be here.
Good. Okay, so we finish up tonight. We've been talking about the Democratic primary for Cook County State's Attorney. The incumbent in this race, of course, is State's Attorney Anita Alvarez. Alvarez has been the Cook County State's Attorney since 2008. She began her career as an assistant State's Attorney in 1986, and she's pretty much been in that office ever since, moving around to different jobs, and of course as the Chief Prosecutor since 2008. State's Attorney Alvarez, thanks for joining us tonight.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
So let's get right to it. You know, before we start, today a big day in Chicago, I would say Chicago crime history, with the prosecuting or charges against someone who killed Tyshawn Lee, the 9-year-old boy. I mean, this has been on Chicago's mind for a couple months now. You said today that this is one of the most heinous crimes you've seen in your office in 30 years.
It is. It's so sad to think, you know, and I'm a mother of four children, but to think that someone would execute this little boy, he's 9 years old, and execute is the proper word for me to use here. And then to hear the statements that he made after the fact about, you know, what he did to this child, the words that he used to explain, you know, pumping bullets into this child, and the fact that it wasn't his first plan. His initial plan was to kidnap him and torture him and cut off fingers. I mean, when I read the proffer, when I talked to my assistants who handled it, it really draws at your heart. I mean, it really does, because to have someone out on the streets with that mentality that he didn't think twice about killing a child. And I think it just reminds us all of the violent crime crisis that we are seeing here in the city of Chicago. And, we have a gun problem. We clearly do. And it doesn't seem like anybody really wants to talk about it or to address it. But it's really clear that we do. And, you know, I don't want to see another child, another 9-year-old, you know, being executed on the street. And, you know, as a job as state's attorney, I think, you know, this is my job. Public safety is my number one concern.
Well, let's turn to the campaign. The big issue that obviously you've been involved with has been the Laquan McDonald case. You've said you didn't think he did anything wrong, but there's thousands of people that are very upset, and they're very upset with you. So what do you think they're upset about?
You know, when I first became aware of this case, and I talked to the U.S. attorney and enlisted the FBI in order to do the investigation. And when I say, you know, that I didn't think I did anything wrong, I'm talking about the investigation. I stand firm in my decision to do a joint investigation with the United States Attorney and with the FBI as our leading investigative agency, because they brought so much to the table. I think what we've experienced, and certainly what I've experienced in these last 3 months, is, you know, I did everything to seek justice for that young man. Everything to make sure that these cases, police shooting cases, which are not easy cases, and every prosecutor across the nation is struggling with handling police shooting cases. With that being said, what I've learned through all of this is that, you know, the United States Attorney and I put a statement out back in April of 2014. Now, maybe people didn't hear it. Maybe people didn't pay attention to it. But we put a joint statement out saying that this was a joint investigation. But what I've learned through all of this is that, you know, clearly that statement and the fact that, you know, we were telling the public we were looking at this wasn't enough. Because people want to know what's going on, particularly in these types of cases. And I so understand it. I mean, obviously, you know, I've been doing this job a very long time. And I know that, you know, that there is distrust of law enforcement. I see it. I get it. I understand it. But I'm also going to say this. I am the only candidate in this race who has herself personally tried and convicted police officers. I'm not afraid of charging a police officer when they break the law. I'm not afraid of doing that. I've charged 96 police officers since I've taken over as state's attorney. So that's not the issue. But I think what we, you know, what going forward, what I've learned from all of this is that I have to keep the public more informed about what these, where these investigations are. And so what I intend to do moving forward, after this election is over, to with my special prosecutions bureau, because that's who handle these cases, is to be able to on my website have people click to a link that will tell you that this particular case is being reviewed and the status is pending. Mm. And then when we conclude it, we will put on the website what the heck that decision was.
So, State's Attorney Alvarez, I mean, you've definitely talked about your record and the things that you've been doing up to this point. But assuming you do win re-election, one of the things that you're going to need to be able to do is build new relationships and new connections with, in particular, the African American community in Chicago, which, you know, all the reporting that AlderTrack and other outlets have done is said that there's been a break between the African-American community and the criminal justice system in Chicago, and that there isn't necessarily a confidence that exists anymore. How are you going to be able to do that? What steps are you going to be able to take in order to rebuild that confidence?
Well, I think, you know, I don't believe that I've lost all confidence in every minority community here in the city of Chicago. I've been doing this job since 1986. And one of the things that neither of my opponents ever talk about, I've never heard either one of them say it, and that is our victims. What do we do? Why do we do this job? We do this job for the victims of crime, and minority communities are disproportionately victimized. Minority communities are the victims of violent crime. We have to talk about that. That's who we serve. Those are my victims. Those are my victims. They've been my victims, unfortunately, for the last 29 years. So when I go to court and my assistants go to court, we are fighting for those victims who are primarily coming from minority communities. But you're right in saying that obviously the public has to have confidence in the police department. They have to have confidence in my office. And I think I've shown over the years the importance of having a relationship within the communities. You know, mm-hmm. I have community justice centers that I opened when I took over. I have tried to expand each and every year. And each and every year, I get the no from the county board. So, you know, Ms. Fox could talk about judgment. Ms. Fox can talk about what she's done. But what she did in her position at the county board was deny me the resources and the ability to expand. The community justice centers are very important. Well, I have four of them. But they're important because you're talking about trust.
Speaking of trust, State's Attorney, one of the things that people have asked about is that, is there a difference between the way that we charge and prosecute police officers versus average citizens in Cook County? Is there a difference?
Well, there's when you're talking about a use of force case or an excessive use of force case, it's a different investigation. Clearly, when you're talking about one civilian shooting
another.
Well,
a different standard, not necessarily the process, but a different standard.
Well, not a different standard, but you need to understand the process, because that's what makes police shooting cases more complex than one citizen, you know, one gang member shooting another. They're more complex for a variety of reasons, you know, because the officers are trained on that use of force model, because they can use force. You have to understand all of that. You have to understand the case law, what the United States Supreme Court has set out as the relevant standard when you're looking at these cases. So the process in reviewing them is more complex than another. But, you know, are you implying that somehow, you know, I'm giving police officers a pass? No, that's not true. As I said, I'm the only person in this race that can stand up here and say that I've done this and I will continue to do it. I don't want a bad police officer. I don't want my assistants to have to work with officers who are breaking the law. So I'm not afraid to do that. And I will continue to do that. But I think I think what the public needs to understand, particularly on shooting cases, they're more complex. So they're going to take longer, and you have to make sure that, you know, if you're bringing charges, that they are charges that are going to withstand scrutiny and they're withstand the trial. Because I said this before, justice isn't served, you know, at the time of an arrest. Justice is served at the conclusion of that trial when that offender is being held accountable for what he did. Yes. So that's our goal. And that's our goal in the Van Dyke case. So we want to make sure we built the best evidence possible.
State's Attorney Anita Alvarez, we'll take a break here and we come back more as we continue Candidate Week here on The Download. Stay with us. It's The Download here on WGN Radio. It's Candidate Week. Mike Fouché's in studio. I'm Justin Kaufman. On the phone with us right now, Cook County State's Attorney Anita Alvarez. She's running for re-election for Cook County State's Attorney. You know, State's Attorney, let me ask you this, because you said in a forum just recently that your opponents are trying to make the race really about confidence in the criminal justice system and that the job and the office entails much more. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, this campaign, unfortunately, has become a one-issue case. Race. And, you know, because, I've been doing these forums and doing lots of interviews and everybody just wants to focus on one thing. And we need to be talking about many more things. We need to be talking about the gun violence. We need to be talking about the necessity for, I believe, and I'm the only candidate that's saying this, is that we need to strengthen our gun laws. We need to strengthen, you know, the case today is a perfect example. I mean, Mr. Dottie only, you know, he had two prior convictions for guns. The last one being in 2013. And what happens when he gets out? He commits not one but two murders. I mean, we need to talk about that. We need to talk about, I have, you know, been criticized and unjustly criticized about, you know, not being stubborn and not wanting reform. I have instituted and implemented the most reform this office has ever seen, and I know it because I started in 1986, and I can tell you what's available today and what I've created was nowhere. We had nothing like that when I started. Mm-hmm. I never had the opportunity to offer someone a diversion program other than drug school. Nothing existed, but I have 32 different programs. I started my first felony diversion program back in 2010. I was sworn in December of 2008. In 2009, I was trying to change the law down in Springfield to be able to offer what we called offender initiative probation. That fell flat in Springfield. I said, you know what? I'm doing it anyway. I started my program. All of the other state's attorneys in the state have followed me with my diversion programs. I was recognized by the Center for Court Innovation out of New York for being one of the most innovative prosecutor's office in the nation. And those diversion programs are very important.
Let me ask you this.
Why?
Because
we're keeping people out of the jail.
And today,
5,400 people.
Go ahead.
I have a diversion program. We had 5,400 people last year on some type of diversion alternative program. That's tremendous. Those numbers we've never seen before. So we need to be talking about
Let me ask you, because I know it's a busy day with everything that was happening on your end, but the Cook County Board President, Tony Preckwinkle, came out with reform ideas for criminal justice. I mean, she brought together a bunch of different politicians talking about restorative justice. reforms, things like that. You were not involved in that, but it seemed like that's a place where the state's attorney should be when talking about reforms in criminal justice. What do you think of those plans?
I have no idea what her plans are. I have had a very busy day today, and I had no idea that Tony Preckwinkle unveiled something. But you said something, a key word. You just said politicians, okay? This office is not a, should not be in the hands of a politician. I am not a politician. Yes, I'm elected because I have to be elected to run this office. I am a career prosecutor, and that's where my you know, that's where my heart will always
be. Let me ask you this.
Do you want a politician? Tony Preckwinkle wants to run the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. You guys are smart enough to see that. This is all about control. This is all about control.
Well, I don't know how smart I am, but you've been saying that you're fighting. You've been saying that you've been fighting a pawn of Tony Preckwinkle, okay?
And, absolutely.
And but Preckwinkle has said that she opposes you because your methods are putting too many minorities in jail for too long. Is that true?
No, it's not true. She refuses to recognize. I just told you I created all these diverse. I have 32 different programs. Last year, we had 5,400 people on some type of alternative program. Those 5,400 people aren't sitting in the jail, okay? They are on alternative programs. She refuses to recognize that. You can ask her why. I don't know why. But she refuses to recognize or give me any credit for all the good that I've done. On a national level, I've gotten all kinds of accolades, okay? And at home, I'm being portrayed as somebody who is, you know, who is stubborn, who, you know, is against reform, and it's just not true.
So does the Chicago criminal, does criminal justice in Chicago and Cook County need further reform, or is it just a perception problem?
Well, no, there's more work to be done. Absolutely. There's more challenge. You know, we have challenges each and every day in the criminal justice system, and there is more work to be done. But I'm going to say this, you know, we've created great programs. We're getting treatment for drug offenders, giving people who would normally be in jail for years, a second, third, fourth chance. And we're going to continue to do that. But at the same time, and this is what my opponents are not recognizing, is that, you know, this is being smart on crime. We're going to focus on diverting out those low-level offenders and trying to get people help. But we cannot forget that we have criminals out there executing children. We have to be tough on the gun offender. We have to be tough on violent crime. And neither one of my opponents are talking about that, but I am talking about that. Because you know what? I don't care if you live in Englewood or if you live in Rolling Meadows. You know, no mother should have to bury a child. And we have to wake up and understand that we have this crisis of violent crime, and we have to do something about it. So as the state's attorney, you know, sometimes I've listened to my opponents. You know, one opponent, you know, doesn't, you know, she certainly hasn't done much in criminal law. The other one, I don't know what she's running for. And, you know, is Ms. Fox, does she want to be the public defender or does she want to be the public guardian? There's nothing wrong with those jobs, but they're taken. You know, we're talking about the state's attorney. I don't think she realizes what the state's attorney does.
State's Attorney Anita Alvarez, she's the incumbent. She's running for re-election on the Democratic primary next Tuesday. State's Attorney, thanks for taking some time out tonight to talk with us.
Sure. Thanks a lot.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. With you till 11 o'clock tonight. Woo, that was a lot of politics. I don't like to do two. That was two. Pete, that was 2 hours straight.
Pete, come on.
Pete. And we're going to shift gears. I mean, we started the show with some Second City Dan back at all. Eddie Furman were on. But one of the best live lit stage shows in Chicago is Right Club.
Wait a minute.
What?
One of the best?
That disembodied voice you're hearing is a person.
I got everybody's mic up now.
All right.
Because everybody's got to talk.
All right.
Because Belknap can't keep it quiet until
so
I get done with the intro.
I've given you your edit.
The edit's already happened.
Read it again.
The best live lit stage show in Chicago is
yes!
Right Club, the show which pits two writers against one each other, arguing lofty thoughts like rise versus fall or fire versus ice. It has been imported to different cities, and we got to talking about what would stop us from importing it to a different medium, say radio. So tonight, we bring you the second installment of Right Club Radio here on The Download on WGN. Ian Belknap and Lindsay Moscato are back tonight with two writers who will write to the death, and we, Download Nation, will be the judge. 312-981-7200. We actually have tickets to the Flower and Garden show to give away. So if you judge tonight, if you come in with more than a, oh, I like Whit, I like Carly, and give a little bit more, we'll put you into the pool and we'll give away some of these tickets at the end of the show tonight.
But if you give some detailed response, but in that voice, that's bonus points.
You get bonus points. Ian, Lindsay, good to see you guys.
Hey.
Good to see you.
All right, so let's talk about the rules, because we did this one. It was great. We did this last month. It was so much fun. We did do Rise and Fall. And so let's talk about the rules of Right Club Radio.
All right. The rules of Right Club Radio are quite simple. We have two opposing writers, two opposing topics assigned in advance, because to have people floundering on the air would be,
that'd be like
agony
too,
for all of us.
It's too consistent in what I do all day.
That's right. Right. That's right. They got a 2-hour block of that just now. So this will be tightly considered, prepared material, not to exceed 4 minutes.
Okay.
In a live stage show, it's 7 minutes because you have someone to look at. You get
laughter, breaks for laughter, for insight, for ahs, things like that.
That's right. The Oz. That's 2 minutes right there.
There's 2 minutes of Oz.
And then you, the listeners, are going to weigh in on who is the victor of this month's prize, the tiny bottle of sparkling wine.
Ooh, real tiny. Lindsay, why good versus evil?
Good versus evil is one of those things where you can argue both sides, really, and that's the kind of topics that we pick. We try to make it so that you could really do anything with that topic, and you just never know what's going to happen, which is the best part.
You guys you do this every month at the Hideout. You got one coming up here
next Tuesday.
But you did Rise and Fall, right? Did you do Rise and Fall last? How'd it go?
Well, I don't know. I mean, 4 minutes is a totally different kind of thing.
That's right.
It's like 4 minutes is like you're on the top of a roller coaster and you just kind of scream your way down. And then 7 minutes, you kind of have to win people over. I keep time in the live show, and so I have a very very detailed philosophy of time and how time moves is when you're performing, and it's like interesting to see how those differ. Yeah.
All right. Anything else we need to know? We're going to take a quick break and then we'll introduce our writers and we'll have them get at it. Anything else we need to know?
I think that's all the people need to know, right?
Yeah. We have to find out who goes first. We'll do that coming back.
The writers will be Whit Nelson and Carly Oishi. All right. So let's take a break, Pete, and then we'll come back and we will hear good versus evil. It's Right Club Radio on The Download on WGN. We got to come up with a theme song for Right Club Radio. It's like Right Club Radio.
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
Done.
Right? It's like real punky. I'm thinking Right Club Radio. It's a Download
like
here
Brewster.
On WGN. Yeah,
punky is funky. Brewster, y'all.
Ian Belknap and Lindsay Moscato are here. They're the brains behind Right Club, the best live lit show here in Chicago, and we have transformed it to Right Club Radio. It's here in The Download once a month, pretty much the week before. You guys do it at the Hideout.
That's right.
It's
so
at the Hideout.
What we're doing for
Tuesday.
You listeners is whetting your appetite for the real show, which takes place at the legendary Hideout this coming Tuesday.
All right.
We also have a podcast.
And a podcast, Right Club.
That's right.
All right. So tonight we're doing good versus evil. Now the idea is we're going to hear from writers in Chicago, one taking on good, one taking on evil, 4 minutes. Tonight, Whit Nelson and Carly Oishi are our readers. Hello, guys. Thanks for being here.
Hello.
All right, so Whit, tell us a little bit about yourself. You are an engineer by day.
Yeah, software engineer. I moved to Chicago to do comedy, but it's hard to make it in comedy, and you sort of settle into what works, and this sort of works, live lit.
It's always a good fallback is Right Club.
Yes.
Always.
You've
That's
made it now.
I've always said. Right. Yeah. Carly, how about you? You have your own show.
I do. My show is called Misspoken. It's the last Wednesday of every month at the Gallery Cabaret. Ah. It's Lady Live Lit, or as my co-host calls it, non-white man a lit.
I love that you do that at the Gallery Cabaret of all places, because all I can think about is like stinky old white men that hang out there.
Well.
But I will say that I've done shows at the Gallery Cabaret, and Mike and Kenny will tell me that, hey, you know, Smashing Pumpkins used to play here. I get that one all the Urge Overkill used to play here. And I'm like, all right, okay, that was a long time ago.
I wish I had known that. I'm going to start.
They're still top of the charts.
Top. No, this was early. This is like 1982. You know, Urge Overkill. Billy Corgan, when he's 16, doing open mic blues songs. That's pretty much Gallery's got. Anyway, all right, let's get to it. So the way this starts is that we're going to essentially flip a coin, but not it's the radio, so we're going to do something different. What are we going
to
do?
Well, as we do in the live show, the only way to determine fairly who shall go first in a Red Club bout is, of course, rock, paper, scissors. And this being the radio, we're going to stick with that.
Okay.
But they're just going to holler out their choice.
Right.
Right?
We've scientifically determined this is the best way to do it.
Right. Yeah. No, that's just basic science. That's... You know,
it is basic.
Right.
That's all like
right.
The periodic table, basically.
How do you want to do? You want to count down?
All right. So as we do in the live show, I will go 1, 2, 3. The blam will be implied.
Right.
Because yours has to be auditory.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We're the blam.
You will be the blam.
Be okay? The blam. Be the blam.
Okay.
All right. Are you guys ready?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Here we go. Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3.
Paper. Rock.
So that means, yeah, paper wins.
Yes, that worked. It worked.
That was amazing.
The choice is yours, Whit Nelson.
I will go second.
Right. Oh, he defers. like the Denver Broncos. I like that. Okay.
He's all a right. Lot like the Denver
Broncos. A lot like the Denver
Broncos. When they post a photo later on, you'll be like, it's uncanny. All right. So, Carly. Luigi, tell the people your topic, please.
Evil.
Evil. Excellent. And are you ready?
I am.
And is it not a second longer than 4 minutes?
Never.
Okay.
Well, I don't cool, because I'm timing
I yet. Don't have a death wish.
All right. Here we go.
All right, here we go.
In 3, 2, 1, begin.
What if Walter White had stayed a chemistry teacher? What if Anakin Skywalker hadn't gone to the dark side? What if Magneto, Lex Luthor, and the Joker had just gone to therapy? 60 minutes dedicated to an upright citizen maintaining good credit and putting the toilet seat down is not going to be your next Netflix binge. Evil is what makes things interesting. Evil is what makes things good. What is evil? Evil is who we are when we first enter this world, kicking and screaming our way out of our mother's body, unable to show empathy, patience, understanding, compassion, or love. It's why we don't smile for the first few months. Seriously, we lack the ability to show positive emotion. Even when we get older and start to express ourselves, we aren't pre-programmed to let some kid we don't know play with our favorite toy or say please when we want something and thank you when we get it. We are wholly selfish, animal-like, the very base of unmitigated desire. We are human. One might argue that the creation of good is a sign of evolution, a sign of progress, if by progression you mean digression. Good is a cunning way to hide our inner evil selves, to mask the thing we can't fully deny. We are so into being evil that we invented good. You are evil at least once a day. You are, amongst other things, a liar, a cheater, a thief. You are a heathen, lawbreaker, a sinner. What? You want proof? Okay, then. Has your driver's license ever had your actual weight? Have you ever used Google to complete a crossword puzzle and or hooked up with someone from Tinder when you were engaged to someone you met on eHarmony? Do you remember Napster? Have you ever used God's name in vain? Yes, this includes OMG. Do you drive the speed limit, slow down at every yellow light, stop at every stop sign, yield at every yield, use your blinker for every turn, give pedestrians the right-of-way, pay every parking meter even when you're running into the store on Saturday at 8 a.m., and can you believe they charge for parking on the weekends? Have you ever masturbated? I'm sorry to break it to you, but you are evil. And let's be really, really honest. Evil is your best self. I love super evil you even more. Yes, you, the person who pushed the closed door button on the elevator when you saw someone coming. You who laughed at the person running after the bus instead of alerting the driver. You who wished your competitor a few minutes ago good luck when you were really thinking, I plan on destroying you and wish nothing more than for you to fail. Good you is super boring. Good you quit gluten even though you don't even have a wheat allergy. Good you stopped drinking on weeknights and before 6 p.m. on Sundays. Good you was really good for 24 days every December until you figured out Santa wasn't real. Good you is the person your parents tried to teach you to be, the one they hope you still are, the one who gets on the phone with them once a month to tell them what they want to hear. Eventually, though, good you wakes up and lets evil you, the real you, be you. You drop all of this good nonsense and start living life. You realize you are going to die one day, and while good has its merits, evil is where it's at. In case you aren't convinced yet, in case you're still sitting there waiting to phone in and cast your vote for good, let me tell you about the doers of good.
you're actually supporting. Donald Trump doesn't want to build a wall between the United States and Mexico, ban Muslims from entering the country, and not raise minimum wage in the name of evil. It's to make America great again. Texas lawmakers aren't trying to shut down abortion clinics because they think abortion is evil. It's for the well-being and health of women. Governor Rick Snyder didn't change Flint's water supply from Lake Huron to Detroit River, giving children lead poisoning for evil reasons. He did it because providing clean, drinkable water to his constituents was fiscally irresponsible. So see, all of you red wine-swilling, chocolate-loving caffeine fiends, evil isn't always what it seems, and good is definitely overrated.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. Good stuff. Carly Alisi.
All right.
All right. That was great stuff. Okay, so there we go. That's one. Carly's down. She did evil.
All right, so listeners, right. What you have to do is retain everything that you just heard, every aspect of it, every notion, every turn of concept, and clear your mind entirely.
All right, so palate
do
cleanser.
Do so now.
Ian's a palate cleanser.
Okay.
Here's a palate cleanser. 312-981 7200. That's the number because we are going to choose who we like better, good versus evil.
Right. But you're not voting now because I'm just clarifying for the people. All right. So, Whit Nelson.
Yes, sir.
Are you ready?
I am ready.
And is your piece not to exceed 4 minutes?
No, it is not.
All right. Here we go. In 3, 2, 1, begin.
Good evening. My name is Whit Nelson, and I've got good news. It's all about good and evil and right and wrong and all that, and the news is this. It doesn't matter. None of it. Do whatever you want. What's that you say? Do anything? What will become of our fragile society built upon the meek and feckless ghost of morality? Well, here's the good news. You see, quantum mechanics tells us that the universe is uncertain. Its equations can be read to reveal a theory known as the many worlds theory. This premise, in addition to being a bottomless well for science fiction writers, posits that for every conceivable choice, a universe exists where we make that choice. So let's examine a hypothetical. You're sitting comfortably in the mall, in the food court, like I said, a hypothetical, when some bipedal meat pouch comes food stall window shopping along. The phone in his pocket explodes in a tinny refrain of "Carry on, my wayward son." He shifts his s'mores-flavored culotta into his other hand so he can answer it. And as he withdraws the phone from his pocket, a folded 20 escapes and tumbles to the floor. He does not notice above the noise and confusion. Glancing around, you see no one else could have witnessed it, so you shuffle over to the bill. You reach down and grasp it, and as you unfold the currency, you find it's slightly sticky. Sweet and sour from Panda Express, you're pretty sure. A dour Andrew Jackson looks out at you as if to say, "One man with courage makes a majority." Perhaps. At this moment, quantum physics says that you divide like a cell. And not just you, the entire universe cleaves in twain, or thrain, or forn, or however many choices you could conceivably conceive of in this moment. In Universe A, your eyes dart around, and you quietly fold and pocket the money. Above Mr. Jackson's muffled objections. The quickest exit in the opposite direction, you dart into a Macy's only to find a criminal chorus of odors. You tell yourself that jerk was probably just going to vote for Trump anyway. And as you cross the parking lot, you stroke your chin and you think, "I bet I look good with a goatee." Now, 6 minutes earlier, in Universe B, you feel the stickiness of the $20 bill, but a grin sweeps across your face. You leap into action and pursue that weeble around the corner and out into the vestibule. "Excuse me," you say. "I think you dropped this." You know he dropped it, but adding "I think" makes you sound more noble, as if you were just asking around. His eyes open very wide as he checks his pockets. "Thank you," he says. "It's almost a question." "You're welcome," you say, providing the answer. You turn and walk away, surely a hero to him and a role model for all people. You are good. You are a good person. But here's the great part. It doesn't matter. If you don't make the good choice, a different you will. And if you do choose the righteous path, your counterpart will not. It's a zero-sum game, no matter what choice you make. Basically, you only need to choose which universe you wish to live in. The good one or the evil one? Where will you be happier? Will you do the good thing, which is hard and honest? Or will you grow that goatee and take the lazy, evil garbage path? Because cosmically, It makes no difference at all.
There we go.
All right.
Hey, there you go.
Outstanding.
All right. That was good. With Nelson, amazing. Carly Oishi. All right. 312-981-7200. We want to hear what you think. 312-981-7200. Who wins? Good versus evil. It's Right Club Radio here on the download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio, and we are in the midst of Right Club Radio. The wildly popular live lit show, which you can see every third Tuesday.
Every third Tuesday,
I got
correct.
It right. That's
at
right.
The hideout. Right.
At the hideout at 1354 West Wabanzia, Ian Belknap, Lindsay Moscato. They put it on. They're in studio tonight. We are doing good versus evil. Our readers, Whit Nelson, he did good. Carly Oishi, she did evil. And we have some response, so let's go to the phones, and we'll start with the phones. I got some texts, too, and we'll do a count. And the winner's going to get this little bottle of champagne that Ian brought
from his fridge. I wouldn't say champagne. I would say sparkling wine.
It's mostly glass. It's mostly just the glass. It's mostly
glass. You know that glass. Dimple at the bottom of the bottle?
Yeah.
It's mostly that.
All right. Let's go to Laura. Laura, welcome to Right Club Radio. Which did you prefer, good or evil?
Definitely good.
All right. Why good?
Because I don't want to live in a garbage universe.
There you go. There you go.
That's fair.
That is true. That is fair. True. Thanks, Laura. So Laura does not want to live in a garbage universe.
Hmm.
All right. That's a good takeaway, don't you think?
Right. Different strokes, yeah. I guess, right?
That's what you thought about when you wrote it. You're like, I'm going to really play to the people who have that fear.
That's right. The dark universe where everything's just like a little... It's not as lit as very well, you know.
Right.
You keep bumping
into things, and it's just trash everywhere. Because who's picking that up?
Right.
Nobody.
Nobody. I'm trying to think of the appropriate joke.
I feel like that universe is one story down from where we are right now. Because the glittering palaces of Michigan Avenue are a wonder to behold. And then you go down underneath.
Yeah.
And it's all greasy
and you're right.
Slick and
Lower Michigan
soot
Avenue.
Covered.
Yeah.
Also, it's really hard to get your recycling picked up.
In Chicago or just
in
Lower
in
Michigan?
In both. So we're very close to a garbage universe.
Do you wander around with recycling? Is that what happens?
Yeah. I sample. Like, okay, are they going to pick it up if I put it here? What if I do this?
Neighborhood
what if I do
by
that?
Neighborhood. All 50 wards.
That's right. All right. So the prizes tonight, we're giving away a pair of tickets to the Chicago Flower and Garden Show. Also, we got two pizzas to give away for Lou Malnati. So let's do that, too. So just to get people to be voting here, 312-981-7200. All right. So I've got 630 says excellent on both parts, but I'm going to take good by a nose.
By a nose.
Hmm.
And then they said you should do this segment every week.
Oh.
Well, I got to agree.
Did they
with that.
Really say that?
They did, yeah.
Was that someone's dad?
Well, my mom might call in now that there's Lou Malnati's pizza. So
nice.
Come on, Mom. I know you're
if
out there.
If it's my dad, that'd be impressive because he died in 86.
Oh. Well, bring it. Way to bring it down. Ian brings it down.
It's called the download.
It's what I do.
There we go.
It's what I do.
All right, let's see what else we got here. Okay, 513 says Carly gets my vote for evil. And there you go.
Thank you.
And Lucille was on the line, and she had, it said Lucille evil. So I'm going to give that one to Evil as well. So okay. We got a 2-2.
All right. So we got a tie ball game,
right.
You guys.
This is good.
Car.
It's a horse race.
Car, K-A-R, 815, says Evil.
Mm. All right.
So there you go. So Evil's got one there.
This might actually be the garbage universe.
Right. And then, see, it's in your conception, it's win-win, and it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter at all.
That's right.
I mean, that's the beauty of this thing.
847 says evil all the way.
All right.
Woo! So there you go. So now it's starting to walk into a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Linda. Linda.
I am Carly's mom.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's automatic Malnati's right there.
Are you voting
automatic.
For good? Just tell me. It's okay.
Pardon?
If you're voting for good, it's okay. Whit's a great guy.
No, I'm calling for evil because you did an excellent job.
Oh, that's so great.
Thanks,
that's
Mom.
So great.
Yeah.
Mom, okay, so we're going to keep you on hold. You can get some of that Malnati's.
In an alternate
universe. Called out. Thanks, Linda.
Carly's mom is not proud of her.
All right.
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 She calls him for me.
Right. Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly.
Just rubs it in her face.
Whit, you got to start texting some relatives, man.
It's true. if, I would just like to remind people, if I win this, I'm coming home with a tiny bottle of sparkling wine.
Sparkling wine.
So it's party all night.
Well, let's go
15 minutes.
Let's go to Ruth. Ruth. All right, Ruth. Which? What do we like? We like. Okay, go ahead.
I like Carly.
Carly?
I have to say both of you guys did an awesome job.
Thank you.
But as I actually listened to them, Carly, your writing was awesome. I have to go for you based on how you wrote. It was wonderful.
There you go.
Thank you.
Ruth, thanks for calling in. I'm going to put you on hold.
Whit is a garbage person.
It's true.
Oh, no.
No, I'm so close to growing
If you could see his beard right now, you would... You would call in again to vote against
him. Yeah.
All right. 312-981-7200. What we're going to do, let's take a break, get our last break out of the way so we can wrap this up. But right now, Evil is taking it. And Evil is, you know.
It's run away.
Taking it to the river, as they say. I don't know if they say that.
Do they say that?
No, you made that up.
And follow up.
Take me to the river.
If they do, why?
Right. Take it to the river. Take it to the dance? No.
Take it to the garbage universe.
They're taking it to the garbage universe. All right. 312-981-7200. What'd you think of good? What'd you think of evil? What's your choice? It's Right Club Radio. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's Right Club Radio. Lindsay Moscato and Ian Belknap are here as well as our readers tonight, Whit Nelson and Carly Oishi. Whit did good. I mean, he did really good.
Well, I appreciate that.
Well. Carly is pure evil.
In a good way.
In a good way. And we're taking votes. 312-981-7200. If you're in the evil camp, you're pretty far ahead. But that's not to say that we can't even that out there. With just from the fact that you're getting texts from family members.
Yeah, that's
right?
True.
And you just got one that said good.
It was lots of good.
Okay, so I'll give you one.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. But again, I didn't know if they were saying you did good or I'm voting for good.
Right.
Oh. So
same diff.
It's all very vague.
Same diff.
No, if this was Right Club, this is what we have to figure out because I love this. I love this. This is so much fun. Right Club on stage at the Hideout is you have that sort of Showtime at the Apollo kind of feel where you will go, who do we like good?
And Showtime at the Apollo.
Like it's by audience participation, right?
Yeah,
it's
really.
We need to figure that out.
Yeah.
We were kind of thinking, like, what if you just had everyone cluster around the glass and you, like, had to come downtown?
Like like you did.
And then you would, like, bang on the glass.
Oh,
so
you could do that.
You would would supply that audience, or would you just expect?
No, like people
just
need
expect
to, people
Michigan
could come
Avenue
down
tourists?
Here.
I feel like if we did this as a weekly segment,
it would
inside of a month, there'd be people with face paint outside,
banging
on the glass,
right.
That's not
and
face
dry
paint.
Erase boards.
It's not
lots
face
of
paint.
Dry erase boards.
It's not face paint. They will. Just if you ask them to, they'll do it.
Just a tent city. Yeah, it springs
exactly.
up.
Exactly.
Okay. Right. I'm picturing dry erase boards where you like write your favorite vote on the thing and you hold it up.
Right.
You're so optimistic.
Right?
Yeah, that would be good.
So
yeah.
For the shanty town that'll spring up outside.
When Carly was reading, there was a guy here when Carly was reading. Right? You couldn't see it because you're reading, who was paying close attention. He had a long beard. And when you said Trump, he banged on the glass and he did a thumbs up to Trump.
Oh.
And then he reached into his shirt and he pulled out a fifth of something.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't
gin.
A fifth. It was a pint.
It was a pint.
I thought he was just happy about the show.
So that's a good pocket.
I think he heard Trump and then he got into it.
Yeah.
We both had Trump.
Well,
maybe
he
true.
Just
we
likes
both
writing
didn't
you
say
guys.
Trump.
All right, let's go back to the.
So wherever you are in the multiverse,
there's a
Trump is there.
Yep. And he's the same.
Here we go.
Great.
Evil 847 says, Evil. That's all we're getting. 773 says, I like the evil lady. Where's my pizza?
Jeez.
Nice.
My
mom got it.
630 says, thought-provoking, substantive, great job, evil. Come on, Whit.
I think we know which universe we're in. It's pretty clear.
The garbage one?
We're in the garbage
one. But here's,
universe.
My,
not the good
here's
one.
My thing, is that it didn't seem like a walk to the degree that the voters are saying.
No.
Because there were parts of both of your pieces that I deeply identified with, right? I am a bipedal meat pouch.
Yes.
Whose inability to smile thus far has extended about 6,000 months.
That's true.
So I'm with both of you.
Yeah, I really loved both of them. And the funny thing is, in
the live show, it's usually the person who goes second that's like most fresh in people's minds. I wonder if it's reversed in the radio universe.
Mm.
Speaking of alternate universes.
Well, I'm curious to know, are you all out there in Barca loungers just entirely focused on the sound of our voices?
Yes.
Or are you doing other things?
No, they're doing other things, doing dishes. Maybe they're sanding a canoe in the garage. There's a lot of things they could be doing.
Do you want them to text us and tell us what they're doing?
I'm curious.
It used to be,
so what are
tell
you
us
doing?
Where you're
I
from.
I would like, if,
now
if
it's, what are you doing?
If there's more than a handful of you sanding a canoe right now, I would be really interested in
it. Hey, man. 312-981-7200. Anyone sanding a canoe, let us know. All right, 815 says, good. There was too much Trump in the evil.
All right. Oh. I just had a hint.
I only said Trump one time. Right.
Trump.
Yeah, you just how you
that's
said
one
it.
Too many times.
It's like fish food. Yeah. You just want a little sprinkling.
A little.
Don't want to go nuts. No. Right?
It's a smell.
312 says, evil wins. Spelled E-V-U-L. So I'm just thinking that's a
God.
Typo. That's
really?
That. I would count that.
It's a typo or it's old
U.S.?
English. Yeah. It's a typo or it's old English.
Each other on the keyboard.
All right. making me feel... 815 says, you're making me feel bad. Both were good, but evil wanted me hearing... kept me wanting to hear more, and I was flossing my teeth when I was listening.
Oh.
Okay. There you go. You asked for it. There it is. So, 815 says, evil wins brushing my horse. See? They're good. They'll give it to you.
All right. Here's what I want now.
I love it. I love Download Nation. I love it.
Any among you who are sanding your teeth,
sand.
That's what I
want to
know.
That's what you want. All right.
I want the truth.
All right. Let's wrap this up. Right now, I've got good with 6 votes. Okay? And I've got evil with 14. Carly Oishi wins with 14 away. Votes tonight. She is the winner of...
The right tiny, tiny bottle of sparkling wine.
Thank you.
It is chilled, so
it's
you
chilled?
Can guzzle it right now.
No.
No, I'm not. I'm not suggesting that.
Carly, how's it feel?
It feels like winning.
It really does.
You did it,
Carly Oishi. You can check out her show, which is the first Wednesday of every month.
Last
Wednesday of every month at the Gallery Cabaret.
Yes.
Also, Whit Nelson, who is a software engineer.
You can hire me if you want.
And you can, if you need some software,
yeah,
Whit can be hired. Why thanks. Not? Thanks to both of you for reading tonight. Lindsay Moscato, Ian Belknap, till next month.
We'll be here.
Well, next week, right?
Yeah, next week, at the Hideout. You can go see him at the Hideout. And then we will bring, whenever you guys want to come in, just come in.
We'll just show up.
All right.
Two writers enter, one writer.
Now that leaves. We know where to park. Just roll in any night.
Yeah, and our podcast just came out yesterday, so you can download that too from our website.
There you go. Well, that's going to do it. Tonight, the download. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN, Chicago and WGNradio.com. Thanks to Pete Zimmerman. Thanks to everybody who listened, called in for Right Club Radio. Patty Vasquez is up next. Big night tonight with the primaries. Rob, it was great. I mean, what a night. I kind of feel like this would have been the night to do like that coverage. Like Super Tuesday was kind of anticlimactic.
This is a lot of fun on both the Republican and Democratic side with Trump and Sanders. I'm loving every minute of this.
Yeah.